Welcome to the Angry Admins podcast for January 22nd, 2008, episode 56. Welcome back, folks, to the Angry Admins podcast. I am one of your hosts, Ryan Necessary.
And as always, I'm the other host, Joe Bibby.
How are you guys doing this week? We are back again to dish out some news and opinions and basically just clog up your iTunes or whatever MP3 player you listen to with our opinions that are more important than other people's.
That's right.
So what is on your radar this week, Joe, as being amazing news?
Well, got some pretty good stuff this week. The you probably heard about this, Time Warner, which thankfully is not around us anymore. Is rolling out some usage caps for its broadband customers.
Yay.
Pretty smart, you know.
Suck.
Way to make your customers hate you even more.
Right.
I don't even know why they would do that.
Well, you know, I used to have them for my cable provider and internet provider, and then Comcast came to town. And so I don't know which one I dislike less.
So the monthly bandwidth caps are set at 5, 10, 20, and 40 gigabytes. I downloaded like 10 gigabytes over the weekend, so that just would not work for me.
Well, at least they're telling you what they are. So in past years, it was like, we have a cap. Well, what is the cap? Well, we're not going to tell you, but you'll know when we cut you off.
Yeah.
So that's like being arrested for speeding when there's no speed limit signs.
Right.
It's like, well, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
Well, that's horrible. Way to go, Time Warner.
Way to fail.
Right. I saw a thing this week. I was looking at the Microsoft stuff. Actually, I saw this on ours. Microsoft has decided they're going to let you have the Windows Vista Basic and Premium Edition in virtualized environments.
Yeah, I saw that. I was excited about that.
They're changing the license for that. Will it have a big impact? I don't know, but...
Well, it just makes it nice so you don't have to pay. Because before you had to buy Ultimate.
Right.
So, you know, this just makes it a little bit cheaper to get Vista in a virtual zone.
Right. I could see definitely using Vista Basic in a virtual thing. Actually, I kind of have a use for that at the office right now.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll maybe that's something we'll buy soon.
Maybe. but if you are still holding back on Vista, just wait till next year because Windows version 7 will be out.
So what is the name of it?
Well, right now it's just called Windows 7. There's no name for it yet. This is an updated roadmap. So there's no official release date. It could easily get pushed back. But this is the first time they've actually moved it up. It was originally going to be 2010. And now they're saying it'll be 2009.
So why should we think this is not just a re-skinned Vista?
Well, from what I understand, I haven't read much about 7, but it's supposed to be quite a bit different, actually. It's almost like what Vista was supposed to be, but it was delayed so long that they just threw something out, which is kind of what Vista felt like to me.
Right.
It's like, let's put something fancy on it and release what we got.
Right.
I don't have any, you know, I don't have anything off the top of my head what's going to be different, but it's supposed to be a lot smoother, a little better, you know, removing the bloat, that kind of thing.
Right. If that does happen, then that effectively means that Vista is the latest Windows Millennium.
Yeah, it's ME.
It's the little
Service
thing.
Service Pack 2.
It's the thing that they tried to put some mascara and lipstick on to sell you a new OS, and then they came right behind it and released another thing.
So I kind of hope this does happen. You know, I won't be shocked if it's delayed a year or two. But either way, you know. It's good to see that the next version is going to come out soon.
Right. I was in Vista all weekend, backing up some files, rescuing some files for some friends off of old hard drives and stuff like that. And I had to deal with like the sharing and permissions, you know, and it's still really not any easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm disabling firewalls and I'm turning on sharing and I'm adding folders to the shared list and then I'm changing permissions and I'm turning on the guest account and it's just like on and on and on. And they do a little better job of telling you, kind of showing you status of right now, this is what you can do in this folder, you know, right. But you're still having to poke around into a couple of different places to turn on enough for it to work. And it always seems like, let's see, I think I eventually had to pull the files back to a Media Center box from my Vista box. I couldn't push it to the Media Center.
Right.
So, but anyway, you know, I got it done, but it seems like file sharing is always one of these things that's harder than it needs to be, whether you're on a Mac or a Vista or Linux or whatever.
It has gotten better on the Mac and Leopard, but it's still not simple. It's still not, you know, check this box to share these files.
And I mean, I want it to be secure, but, you know, don't make me jump through all these hoops all the time.
Right.
So, anyway, that was my weekend. And based on that, I mean, Vista still, I mean, I was throwing hard drives in and out of it, and it was loading drivers, and it was seeing stuff on the network just like it should.
That's
and,
good.
You know, it was performing pretty well, so.
Still doesn't make me happy.
Yeah, I really can't complain too much about it. I think it's okay. It hasn't burned me yet, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion now, and I think I've said this on here before, is that it's not terrible, it's just not better.
Yeah.
So what's the point?
Plus, like we said too, I mean, I'm coming to it a year late after everything's already almost fixed.
Yeah.
No. And you dealt with all the first round guinea pigs.
It was pretty painful.
No driver situation stuff.
And I didn't even come onto it on release day. It was a good month or two after it came out that I even had it. And I still hated it.
Yeah.
Mm. But
anyway, what else we got?
So if you are a fan of all things Brood and all things steampunk, this a Russian guy built a steampunk computer and modded it to function also as a brewery.
Nice.
Which, while isn't really IT related, it's other than its computer, it's still pretty sweet. And, you know, it's got all kinds of cool nozzles and stuff like steampunk stuff does. And,
you know, when your computers are broken, it makes you want to drink.
Yes.
So when it breaks down, you know, you've got the other.
My only issue I would have with it is that most likely you will tend to break your computer more. I've definitely had some hazards with drinking and fixing computers at the same time. It just doesn't work.
Right.
We won't go there, but I did something very stupid to somebody's secondary drive. We'll just say that and let you think about it.
Well, I've pulled out a graphics card in a machine that was powered up at the time. So. But it was like after the whole day of powering it up and down and up and down and up and down.
Yeah.
And I got distracted and I just jerked out the card and I realized the machine was running.
Yeah.
So
bye-bye
graphics card.
I don't know.
We'll have a link to that in the show notes. You can check it out.
Yeah, just look at it. It's cool to look at. That's about all there is to it. The other thing I saw this week, and I think this will kind of segue us into another topic, is on Slashdot they posted a story about, you know, how do I become an ITIS manager? And I was, you know, reading through the comments on that, and, you know, I think most people agreed that you just shouldn't.
Okay.
You know, move into something else because it's really, you know, we think you're underappreciated as a sysadmin. Just wait till you get into management.
Yeah.
But I thought it was an interesting topic, and it got me thinking about, you know, what's important as an IT employee to prove yourself. I've been thinking about things like, you know, do I want to add more certifications to my resume as I look about moving forward? And so that's something I've been looking into in the last couple of weeks. I wondered what your opinion is on something like, you know, like a Linux certification or the MCSE certification. Do you think, in your opinion, at least in our experiences, are those valuable?
As a technician or as a manager?
Either.
I would say you probably don't need it as a manager, because I've had plenty of IT managers that don't know anything about IT. You know, they're just...
But were they good managers?
They're manager types.
I mean, that's the thing, is not, you know...
I've had so few good managers, though. I mean, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, I could probably count them on one hand, you know, in all the years I've been in the workforce having good managers. I don't think you need to be super technical to be a good IT manager.
Sure.
You just have to listen to your employees, find out what they need, provide it to them, watch out for their interests. You know, I don't want my manager telling me, get out of the way, let me tap on it. You know, I mean, he's probably in the way.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I mean, if you do know technical stuff, I mean, it can, you know, you can use your age and your wisdoms, like, oh, well, we don't want to upgrade that on a Friday before the holiday because we're all going to come back and everything will be broken. You know, different experience could weigh in there. As far as the certifications go, I've known so many sysadmins, probably 100 to 200
mm-hmm.
over the course of the years, and maybe 3 or 4 I can think of had any cert at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think one of them had a Cisco cert, and a few may have had MCSE
mm-hmm.
or a Red Hat. But most of the ones I've worked with have not ever had certs.
It definitely does not seem to be as important in our area, especially in the company we're in.
Mm-hmm.
However, I would say, depending, it can be important depending on the company. For me, it's not really about, I mean, I said adding it to my resume, but for me, it's more about, you know, getting that forced hands-on learning.
Right.
And that's kind of why I want to do it. And to me, that's probably the most useful reason to do it. I would say definitely certs on their own are not going to get you a job.
Right.
You can have 25 certifications, but if you have no experience, then they have no way of knowing whether you can really apply that knowledge, especially the more basic certs that are just kind of multiple choice questions.
Right. Well, that's kind of my thing, too. I mean, if it's coming down between two people and they have very similar resumes and one mm-hmm. has certs and one doesn't, then that might be a deciding factor,
sure.
you know, but I think more people look for, you know, man, I need a Windows Server guy, you mm-hmm. know, and if you have Windows Server stuff, you know, out the wazoo on your mm-hmm. resume, you're going to be carefully yeah. considered for that yeah. position, whether
Absolutely.
Or not you have a cert.
You know, Absolutely.
So they want people that can do the work, you know, because, I mean, we've all known people that had a piece of paper saying they were good at something and they sucked. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I would say just getting out there and, you know, getting getting a job doing, you know, just schlepping cables and monitors around just to start getting experience and start getting stuff in your resume is really the best way to kind of break through. Although on the other hand, I guess, I, you know, my very first, computer job, having an A plus certification has helped me get the job. Now the A plus is not much of a certification. I mean, it's
right.
basically, you know, how to plug in a PCI card kind
right.
of a thing. It's
right.
pretty simple, but it was a hardware technician job and they required A plus. So, I wouldn't rule it out completely, but definitely, getting
well,
a,
well, that means,
experience.
You know, at least as much or probably more than just the guy at home who
right.
managed to figure out how to upgrade his graphics card and install
right.
a driver.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I mean, that's what this job was upgrading hardware and maintaining hardware. And it was all about the hardware in this job and it didn't pay very much, but
so that was probably appropriate
yeah.
for that position,
yeah.
you know, but yeah, I mean, if I don't have any certs, if it was up to me what to get, I probably would get, you know, the Red Hat engineer thing and maybe mm-hmm. a Cisco. I think the Cisco certs are sometimes maybe harder to get than they need to be.
Yeah, I would say the Cisco certs are kind of, I would consider those almost separate from all the other certs because those seem to be highly valued.
Right.
That and like MCSE and then the Red Hat, those few sets seem to be the ones to go after.
Right. Well, it's rare too that anymore, I mean, companies, they don't want to pay to train their people. You know, they would rather just go out and hire people who are out of work that already have the cert
mm-hmm.
and then bring them on board.
Right.
And then be able to tell their, you know, if they're a contract company or something like that, oh, our people are certified.
Yeah.
You know, and we didn't have to pay for it.
Right.
So, you know, way to go. But I mean, if you do work for a company that offers it, you know, and they are offering to pay for it, then I think it's worthwhile to go ahead and try to do
mm-hmm.
it if they'll recoup some of your costs. So what were you telling me about the Red Hat stuff, that it's good for two versions? Basically.
Yeah, so apparently, from what I've read, the Red Hat cert stays valid for two versions. So basically, anything that's a Red Hat version 5 right now is still valid. But version 3, so this is Enterprise we're talking about.
Yeah.
Enterprise version 3 is not.
Mm.
So it gives you a longer term to keep those certs valid, which I think is pretty nice.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm thinking about getting, is the first the technician one and then getting the engineering one and maybe just doing it all at once. I don't know yet. But.
Where I work, they used to make us do these Brain Bench certifications.
Yeah.
And Brain Bench is like a third party company that, you know, will give you a test on anything from mm-hmm. basket weaving to whatever, you know. And they were had these tests we had to take for IT security and all this stuff, and they were just horrible. I mean, so much of what they were asking us didn't apply to what we did.
Right.
And I mean, if you put 10 sysadmins in a room and no two of them have even a remotely similar job, like, one lady could be totally DBA stuff, and another guy is mostly networking and cables, and another person is like right. Windows, and another guy's Linux, and you know, it's just like, how do you make a standardized test for all of those people to yeah. say that, okay, you're qualified? Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't know what they do.
Right.
So it was just crazy. I mean, you know, I was past them and it wasn't a big deal, but it just seems a shame that they would rather just, you know, check a box saying, all right, our people have this certification mm-hmm. and who cares if it actually applies or helps them do their job. So.
Right. Yeah. It seems to be a big problem where they just want to be able to check that box.
Well, and it goes back to the thing where no one really knows what sysadmins are or what they really
yeah.
do.
Yeah, that's a problem.
I'm done trying to educate people. My crusade is over.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to apologize or explain myself because I'm angry.
So the other thing recently we've been working on is we... actually installed VMware for the first time.
Yay.
And that was pretty exciting. I'd installed it previously and just kind of messed around with it, but it was on an old box that didn't have very much RAM, so it ran really poorly. But we actually converted our backup system to a VMware system, which was pretty fun to do.
Right. So the Windows 2003 server got
wiped.
CentOS 5.
And reloaded with CentOS 5, and we added... we didn't go for the beta, which I think is dumb to do on any production server. So if you're using beta software on a production server, fire yourself and go home.
Unless you wrote the software.
Yeah, even then, you're fired. but yeah, the install went really smoothly. And then installed Windows 2003 server on top of CentOS and VMware. And, you know, actually went pretty quick. I did it all in one day and even got the backup server up and running fully. Pretty cool. I'm gonna try moving it to a new server just to try it, and I'm curious how well that actually works.
I'm interested. Well, I want to use that to throw a you know, I have that SQL database thing on my PC on my
right,
desk.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
like I came in this morning and it was blue screened.
Yeah.
So because like it's a long weekend and it just sits there and I think it just slowly runs out of memory. Mm-hmm. So I would like to get that database off my PC.
Yeah, it'd be nice to move that. Yeah, that's such a weird piece of software. It requires, you can't use it on Windows 2003 server, is what's weird about it.
Right.
So we'd have to install
it. That's why we haven't already moved it.
Yeah, that's why it's on your computer. But I think we can still get it there. But yeah, overall, I mean, positive impressions. I feel good about it. I'm excited about moving forward with VMware and moving the rest of our servers into that environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll take a lot more time on the other ones because the backup server was easy. It's not used that much and didn't have much on it custom. So moving our custom servers is going to be very painful.
So we also flipped the switch and jumped into Hyperdrive.
That's right.
With the Sonnet.
Yes, we had a Sonnet RAID, external RAID, that's using SAS, SCSI over Serial ATA, which is a nice update to SCSI because it uses standard SATA drives, server class, of course, but yeah, this thing's pretty sweet. We threw it on the Mac and using it as a storage array for all our video work.
Yep.
And unformatted, it's 6 terabytes. Formatted with RAID 5, it's about 4.5, I think.
Right. Which is healthy.
Yes. It's good. It's a healthy chunk of space.
It's a good chunk of space.
It'll take us a while to fill that up. I'm excited about that, though. We'll be able to actually use it, use our video box exactly how we wanted to, where we can keep projects together. And
well, it's nice to bring something online that's bigger than, you know, because, I mean, we're kind of like sort of the rogue element. Right. In our big organization.
Right.
And so it's like the people that are actually being paid to store files, it's like, hey, we got more space than those guys. You can't call us if you need to store some
yeah,
files.
That's pretty sweet. And it's nice because it's not a NAS. So it communicates over, you know, it uses a PCI Express card and communicates at full speed to the RAID. And before we were using a NAS type device over the network, which was always kind of slow.
Right. So, yeah, we repurposed that to store old user data.
That's right. Yeah, so I don't know. Pretty cool. The VMware seems to be working. One of the cool things that I didn't know about VMware, going back to that for just a second, is you can actually set your virtualized environments to auto boot on startup, which mm-hmm. makes it much more useful. And it even does it on shutdown. So you can do the standard shutdown command for your host OS, and your guest OSs will then shut down and close, and then your actual host OS will shut down.
Well, we'll definitely need that if we do the database on the other thing, because we want to clean that up and shut mm-hmm. it down nice. So, yeah.
Pretty sweet. I recommend anybody who hasn't tried VMware, try it. It's free. It's not open source, but so what? It's free. Give it a try. It works really well.
Mm-hmm. And the paid version is the one that lets you
move back and forth automatically.
Stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed with what we saw. I mean, we kind of talked about this when we had, was it Zach,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a guest. And we really, it was something that we wanted to do, but we just didn't have, A, the time, B, the kind of the place to do it safely without messing with production servers. And I think a lot of it was just a time thing. Mm-hmm. We're kind of caught up since it's been the holidays and slow.
Yeah, it's a good time of the year to work on things. So
yeah, that's nice. I was really impressed with A, the interface, B, the fact that it didn't throw out any errors at us and we didn't have to look up any problems.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we were doing was pretty standard, but still, you know, throwing a Windows server on something that doesn't really, that's not really there, you know, that was kind of nice that it faked all that out. So I'm impressed.
The interface is nice because you get that nice console app and you can actually install that on any Windows machine or Linux machine and just connect up to your virtual environment right there over the network. And then on my Mac, I can actually just SSH in and run it as a remote X session.
Right. So would you say if somebody's pretty savvy with Linux and stuff like this,
mm-hmm.
if somebody wants to have Linux to kind of play around with at home, do you think it's worthwhile to do the VM thing or would you just say dual boot?
I think for playing around, VM is a lot easier. Because you're not having to, if it breaks, you break your networking or something, you know, you can't look anything up now.
And right.
Having it kind of separate and you can just blow it away and restart whenever you feel like. Right. And
see, I think it's really good. If you want to dive deep into Linux mm-hmm. or you want to do like some testing out stuff and it's like, okay, I'm going to load a machine that has enough RAM. That's kind of one of the choke points is you need quite a bit of RAM to run some of this stuff.
Yes, definitely need a minimum of 2 gigs.
For me, I could see it being valuable to have a base VM server and then have virtual another copy of like CentOS running,
mm-hmm.
Ubuntu, Red Hat, just several different Linux servers doing things
mm-hmm.
and like flipping back and forth between those, talking between them, moving files back and forth, doing the internetworking between all those things. And, you know, just having each of those operating systems being able to, like, side-by-side do a comparison, work out bugs or whatever.
What's great, too, is that, so, like, on my Mac, I have Parallels, but it only supports 32-bit app OSs. VMware Server, which is free, supports full 64-bit, any 64-bit OS. So, I mean, obviously, as long as your host OS is 64-bit, but... Yeah. I don't think, and I may be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure you have to have a server class OS to install it onto, but that can be Linux.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it will install on XP.
Yeah.
Or Vista, basically, you know.
Yeah.
But I may be wrong on that. I'm trying to look that up right now, and I'm not finding it, so.
Well, but I was happy with what we did. I think it's impressive. I'm just glad we finally did it.
Yeah, I think... you know, from looking at this now, if you're not running virtually, you know, move to it. Move to it as fast as you can.
Besides, it looks great on your resume.
That's right. It does. But yeah, we'll see in the long haul. We'll probably be giving updates as things move on. If it breaks or crashes, we'll
complain about it.
Yeah, definitely complain.
We'll bash that free software.
That's right. Okay, yeah, here it is. I found it in the server admin manual. So it is only Microsoft Windows Server 2003 or... Windows 2000 server or advanced server, but then any version of Linux will be considered a server operating system by them, so you can install it on any Linux.
All right, folks, that's going to wrap up another episode of Angry Admins. We're going to have some show notes on the website at angryadmins.com if you want to check out links to any of the great stuff we talked about this week. Feel free to send us email at feedback@angryadmins.com. Until next week, I am one of your hosts, Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby.
Stay angry.